Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Hello and welcome to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast for the first time in 2021. It is a much shorter break than is per usual for the winter break, but due to COVID-19, of course, we are back much sooner than the regular viewing would be. We hope you've had a happy new year, a merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, just a nice holiday period. I do feel sorry for a lot of people in Europe in particular, and the Americas where the virus continues to spread at a rapid rate. I feel quite guilty being in Adelaide at the moment where, you know, I live a quiet normality in comparison. So I might not understand the situation, but I do feel for you guys and I hope you guys are staying safe. On today's episode of the podcast, we will be discussing all the action from match day 14. And we saw another change at the top of the table and a gap between the bottom four is becoming ever more apparent. And everything in between, we saw tons of fantastic goals, some goalkeeping blunders, and pretty much everything in between. My partner in crime, my striker, my teammate, Eva Lotebola. Eva, welcome, happy new year. How are you doing?
Yeah, happy new year from me too. And of course, happy belated birthday, Matthew, once again.
Thank you.
Yeah, 2021 doesn't feel like a new year because I have the feeling we just had an international break and came back from it. So it does feel a bit surreal. But yeah, we're back in 2021 or we're back at football and some... Yeah, for some teams, it's same procedure as last year, as Dinner for One would say. And yeah, actually don't know if you guys know that, because apparently this is a very German thing to do, to watch the show Dinner for One. And people from Great Britain don't even know it and don't find it funny. But Germans love that. That's a New Year's Eve tradition for us. So go watch it. It's quite funny. Yeah. And yeah, we have a lot of action to talk about. Sorry. So let's go.
Yes, let's. And a team that gave their fans a surprising New Year's gift was Hamburg. Now, Hamburg have been in a rich vein of form recently. And it's four wins on the bounce for them. They beat Jan Regensburg 3-1. And what is becoming apparent with this Hamburg team, it is almost eerily similar to the Köln team from a couple of years ago. The kind of the equaliser, or the same thing in both teams, is they had Simon Terodde, and he did score in this game. He has 15 of the 30 goals they've scored in the opening 14 match days. David Kinsombi opened the scoring, and then Max Bushushkov getting the equaliser. Terodde before halftime, and then Bakary Jatta, who was absolutely superb in this game, getting the third and final goal. It means that Hamburg are now top again. And Eva, what an important result for Hamburg to not only win against a team that has given them a bit of trouble before, but more importantly, start the new year the right way.
Yeah, and this game was not really easy to watch for spectators, because we had three VAR decisions, but we have to say that for the whole match day, at least what I saw, every VAR decision was correct. So we do moan about it a lot, but especially in that game, I thought that they were all correct, especially I think it was before the 2-0, 2-1, sorry, when it wasn't really clear whether Maya had his hand on the ball or not. And I thought that the decision was correctly made. And yeah, very good job by the VAR in this game. Wasn't an easy one, especially after the Jatta goal as well. And Yeah, was really good decision making here. I really love the build up before the 1-0. Just look at that. This is where a lot of players. I think it starts with Leibold at some stage, and just the whole way that goal is being built up is shows the quality Hamburg has in comparison to other teams in this league. I really like that. Yeah, and. Others, yeah, I thought that Bezuchkov looked a bit like he didn't see the ball in. Like if you look at that scene, he just looks away, looks to the referee on the side, and then starts cheering. That was a kind of funny scene. But yeah, in general, I thought although it got close when Regensburg scored the 3-2 or eventual 3-2, I thought that Hamburg showed dominance throughout the game. I mean, they're statistically they were the better team as well. Yata was one of my favorite players in this game. I thought he's coming back to a form he had been has been like 1 or 2 years ago, and I really liked seeing that. Although just quickly I have to talk about that the yeah newspaper with four letters here in Germany once again starts an ugly campaign against him, which is just bullshit and racism. And I thought we were done with that, but apparently not. So full solidarity with Bakary Yata here. But yeah, and Tiroler, of course, he had one shot on target and converted that one. So you see, that's really his quality. I mean, he has 15 goals now. With Leeds, that table or that statistic. I mean, then you have Dawson, Kluivert, and Testrud all three with 9 goals. So yeah, and I thought that Ulreich was quite good in goal as well.
Yeah, he did put in a good performance, and the best of goal was unlucky. There was a foul in the build up. It was the right decision, but I don't think Jan weren't bad in this game. They just, I guess, the easiest way to describe them is that they just didn't have the individual quality that Hamburg has, and Hamburg put it all together, especially after going after Bezuchkov got the goal to level the score. So, it's not bad for them. They've got a 5-point cushion to Eintracht Braunschweig in 15th. However, as we know, a string of results can change things for the worse for them. So that will be a watch this space thing with Jan Regensburg. The team that sits in fourth at the moment is VfL Bochum, and they took a 2-1 win against Darmstadt. They did it late. In fact, all the goals came in the final 10 minutes. Tobias Kempe continuing his excellent form for Darmstadt. He now has 8 goals this season. He opened the scoring. He added a second, except it was in the wrong net. An own goal 2 minutes later, and then Milos Pantovic made it 2-1 for the host, giving Bochum a home win and keeping them well and truly in the hunt for promotion. Eva, I guess, like many things, it is two sides of the coin. And not a great performance from Borken, but they did enough. But for Darmstadt, it just continues the trend of games where they have the chance to win. They go a goal up, and then it just all kind of falls apart rather quickly.
Yeah, I actually thought that game looked like it's going to be a nil all of a better sort. Like it wasn't the, as you've mentioned, the best performances by both teams, but thought that both defenses especially were quite solid. For example, yeah, pointing out Amir Bella Kotschap for Bochum here, who had 10 clearances, or Emmanuel Hoon, 6 clearances for Darmstadt on the other side. Bella Kotschap, I think he got the yellow card quite early in the first half, but for a player at that age, that young age, it's not always easy to, yeah, keep that form the whole game, not risking a second yellow. So that was really good by him. I thought then in the end, this was normally a game where the team that scores first kind of decides the game. It's typically, especially if the goal comes that late into the game. And that free kick was a beauty, I thought. But yeah, Bochum shows some quality, and I think that's something that is maybe a bit emerging from that Pokal win against Mainz as well, that they really strengthen their self-confidence and say, okay, we will never back down here. We always have a chance to actually go back, come back. And they shown it in that game. Of course, it's a bit lucky that that own goal by, I think, Lucia was involved in that as well. So it wasn't a completely lucky goal in the end. Riemann was quite good in goal as well. Schön only, I think he only got two goals, two shots on target against him. And yeah, they both went in. So he probably wasn't that happy. And I think the biggest problem for Darmstadt was that their long balls didn't really or weren't accurate enough. So for example, Rapp only had only one of his 12 long balls really went up. And was successful in the end. So that was probably one of Darmstadt's problems, but that shows that, for example, Bochum was very good in their aerials. For example, Robert Jewell, who wouldn't be the first person you would think of, but he won three aerials for Bochum. And I think those are the smaller parts of the game that really decided it.
Yeah, and it's the thing we talk about a lot, is it's these moments where, you know, when the game is there to be won, who's going to be the team that stands up? And for that short period, it seems as if Darmstadt get that score the free kick goal from Kemper, and it's going to happen. They're going to win. They're going to continue what is, you know, they're a lot better. They're a little bit better away from home this season. You know, they're slowly going to build up the table. And it was the way they lost it. Give up two goals in the space of a minute. It's devastating. It is unbelievably devastating to lose a game in that position, and you just wonder, you know, what is their next move? We know that defensively they have struggled a lot. They've just signed Thomas Isherwood from Östersund in Sweden. Who knows what he can do in terms of bringing some stability to the defense, because one thing is certain, they have lapses, and when the lapses come, they come in a heavy way, as seen here. Another game without a win. Let's move to our final Group 1 game at the Holstein Stadion. Kiel versus Osnabrück. An important game for Kiel. They know they had to win to stay top, and they weren't able to do it. It was Osnabrück who continued their fine away form. They have taken 15 points on their travels this season from 8 games. That is second best in the league. And it was a good win for them. Niklas Schmidt, who has been nowhere near the starting lineup this season, he gets his first goal. And then Sebastian Kirk, wow, what a goal. A glorious free kick to beat Ioannis Gelios before half-time. He had his sixth goal of the season. I think that's his fifth from a dead ball situation. Kiel got a goal in stoppage time from Ahmet Aslan, but it wasn't enough. It means Osnabrück breaks its two-game losing streak, and Kiel get displaced at top of the table. We know Osnabrück have been up and down, but one thing they've been able to do, especially on the road, is to put the good teams under significant pressure, and they did that despite the fact they didn't have a lot of the ball.
Yeah, and I was really impressed by the performance. I think especially after that second goal, you could see that Osnabrück really wanted that win. And for Kiel, in my opinion, they just started too late to really put pressure on Osnabrück's defense. And I mean, you could see that on the score sheet as well. But in general, it's not a big surprise that that goal came in stoppage time. And yet the thing is, if you look at the heat maps of this game, the right side where Schmidt is positioned shows that Osnabrück's right side wasn't really enough involved to create enough heat for the heat map. It looks a bit like, if you look at the heat map and you don't know the score, you would say that Kiel was the winning team just from, because they nearly never, or there weren't enough in Kiel's really last third to actually create heat. Really effective by them. I mean, they had six shots on target, but they weren't really directly in front of the goal. And I mean, Kiel had three shots blocked as well. So maybe that's I think that Kuhn was really pissed in the end. I mean, he saved 80% of the shots, but you could see in those last 10 minutes, there were two or three times he was really screaming at his back four, saying like, this the second time this happened. And so you could really see that he wanted that win, really pushed his players. And I thought they were quite successful. And I thought in the end, it was a deserved win for Osnabrück because they did not do much more than they needed, but they succeeded in that.
Yeah, I think the one thing that was impressive about Osnabrück was they clearly came with a game plan. They understood that, you know, it's okay to not have possession and just really defend astutely. I can understand exactly how Philipp Kuhn feels when you know, you're 2-0 up, game's nearly done, and your clean sheet is very much in hand, and then you give up a goal. He was right to be aggrieved because it was pretty ordinary defending that led to the goal from the set piece, but I think he'll get over it, being that they did win the game. It does mean good news for Osnabrück. They go back up to eighth. And yeah, they're only 5 points away from the top three. They're above where I think most of us would have had them this season so far. So, you know, they're in a good position going forward. And I think they've done a very, very good job. And it was a very, very good win against a strong Kiel side. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we are going to head to Fürth when Greuther Fürth hosted St. Pauli. The status quo very much remained for these two sides as 2021 hit, and that was Greuther Fürth continuing to win, and St. Pauli's misery compounded with another defeat. And if we are honest with each other, this game, the scoreline is so unbelievably flattering. It's really difficult to say how bad St. Pauli were in this game. Final score was 2-1. Julian Green getting a penalty and then a Sven Brodersen mistake, leading to Harve Nielsen getting the second. Yeah, this game should have really... I should have not even been close. But St. Pauli were given a bit of life. Leon Flack from way downtown getting it to 2-1. But then that was all she wrote. It's really hard, Eva, to win a game when you only manage two shots on goal for an entire game.
Yeah. I watched parts of that game on the weekend, and just I think there's one scene in the end, like in stoppage time already, and St. Pauli has a throw-in, and they throw in lands in front of the Fürth players, and every one of the St. Pauli players stops running and walking and everything, and that's kind of something that you could really put on that whole situation that is going on at St. Pauli. I think they are winless for 11 games straight in a row or something like that. And yeah, you can really see that in the team. I mean, as you've mentioned, kind of surprised. I mean, Greuther Fürth had 23 shots on goal, 6 shots on target. If you look at the XGs, it's 3.34 to 0.05. Mm. And then if you look at the other games that ended 2-1 this match day, this is one where you wouldn't expect it to be. I mean, that penalty in the beginning, I thought that St. Pauli went into the game a bit better. You could see maybe some sparks coming up, but that penalty was so unnecessary by Knoll. I don't even know why his arm is up there if he wants to block the shot. I mean, if you turn away, then please put your arm away as well. Mm. And yeah, I mean, it's not, yeah, the best challenge at the beginning of a new year to go up against Fürth, where we know which quality lies within. But still, I mean, Now St. Pauli signed a new goalkeeper on loan because when Brodersen didn't really look good in that game as well, that mistake was unbelievable. But I don't really know if that's the right point to start. I mean, then you could go back to the other three goalkeepers. I mean, this now the fourth goalkeeper. I don't really think that's the problem St. Pauli has at the moment. I mean, we talked about it off air. Some player we do really miss at St. Pauli is Mats Maladeli, who is at Genk, if I'm correct, and he does not play at all. So maybe some St. Pauli fans would hope for a loan. I mean, the thing is, I don't really know if... I do think that Maladeli would come back, but the problem is more of if St. Pauli could make it happen. I mean, they have a player on loan from Wolfsburg, a striker, but if you see how this, as you mentioned, that goal by the US American, I think he has German parents, but grew up in the US and is a US young national team player, something like that. Leon Flach, it was good, but you can also see that he was just desperate to at least have a shot on goal or a shot on target in that matter. And I mean, and if you look at the heat map here as well, and you exclude the subs for St. Pauli, what would be Burgstaller, Bubala, Kiri, Matanovic and Flach, St. Pauli barely crossed the halfway line in 90 minutes until those subs came on. And also Leonard Paccarada only had a 50% pass success rate. That is normally a number you would expect higher up on the pitch, like in the formation, like striker, midfield or something like that, but not with your left back. And I think that's something Zampaoli really has to worry about. I mean, they only had 35% possession, 71% pass success, and that all really adds up, does not help them at the moment. And they really have to win that game against Würzburg on Wednesday.
Yeah, that is an incredibly important encounter. You do mention the two players they've brought in on loan, Dejan Stojanovic, the Austrian goalkeeper on loan from Middlesbrough, and Omar Marmoush from Wolfsburg. I guess let's talk about Fürth quickly. Yeah, I think the only thing they really missed was that clinicalness in front of goal. They should have been so far ahead in this game. It was very much like a cat toying with a mouse, and just that's what it was. It just, they kept playing around with it, and they should have really not only gone for the kill, but really sent a message. They could have really sent a message to the teams around them that you know, they are no joke. So I guess it was a missed opportunity to kind of boost the goal difference. But again, 3 points is 3 points. Let's move to Heidenheim. They hosted Nürnberg. We know Heidenheim had, before the break, they've been in pretty good form. But they started 2021 the way they would have loved to. 2-0 win against Nürnberg. Dennis Tomala and Patrick Meinke, the goal scorers. A really good performance from Heidenheim. They, you know, they did what they had to do. And, you know, we spoke about kind of the, you know, what were we going to get from them. You know, the opening 13 matches, we saw a bit of a slow start, but they were building and building. And, you know, this was a good way to start the new year for them. And you know, they are 5 points adrift from third place, but, you know, they are poised to make a run at some stage, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think they really want to go against this, the Zweite Bundesliga side that has been in that whole relegation promotion playoff. They just want to break that spell, kind of, and you could see they had some difficulties with it at the beginning of the season, but I really like the way they fought themselves out of that position. And in this game, you could, in my opinion, although Nürnberg had some chances, Kevin Müller was really good in goal. I mean, he saved 83% of the shots against him, and Nürnberg didn't really find a way to put enough pressure on that whole back four, the whole Heidenheim defense, in my opinion. And yeah, I really did like the way Heidenheim played throughout this game. I mean, the possession was quite level, similar to the pass success rate, but I think the individual class of players, like maybe Tamala, just in a way that he comes in and he has three shots on target and actually managed to convert something out of it. Accuracy was a huge point in this as well. For example, in the long balls, Heidenheim was mostly better in bringing them actually to win for them. And for Nuremberg, it has been a really weird season. I mean, then Gauss is being suspended with a red card because he kicks a water bottle away or something like that after that VAR decision. And yeah, I thought that Heidenheim was the deserved winner. And I mean, Nuremberg just started too late to actually put pressure on Heidenheim in any way. And in my opinion, it always looked like Heidenheim was closer to scoring the third goal than Nuremberg was to scoring the first.
Yeah, without question. And, you know, it's still really difficult to get a read on Nuremberg. They currently sit in 11th. Their form, the last five games, 3 wins, two defeats. Very much up and down. We know they started the season quite slowly and they've started to build into it. But it's a real enigma. I'm not really sure where they're at. They are better than they were last season. That's not hard, given the circumstances. But, you know, they're not probably where we thought they would be at this stage. Maybe further up. There's a team that we'll talk about in the next section that, you know, they started equally as poor, but they are now rolling, and we will talk about it in a moment. A game that was very important for both sides was Würzburger Kickers and Karlsruhe. Würzburg hadn't won since match day 8. Karlsruhe had lost 3 straight heading into this game. Now, the score sheet read 4-2 to visitors, with Marvin Vanitzek being, for me anyway, the man of the match. 2 goals in this game. He did also add a goal to Würzburg. Würzburg's 2 goals were both own goals. It was an important result for Karlsruhe, and it certainly helps when 4 of your 5 shots end as goals.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that game was such a weird one to watch, actually. I did watch it in that conference thingy, but for me, at really no real stage of the game, Würzburg put on a lot of danger for me to Karlsruhe. I mean, those own goals were, I mean, that first own goal, I don't think Würzburg would have scored in any way in that position because, yeah, that, never mind. It was really weird situation, and I think Karlsruhe could have easily won it a bit higher as well. I mean, I was really, happily or positively surprised the way Karlsruhe played here. They, especially players like Lorenz, was one of the players that really stood out in that game. I mean, he had 2 assists. And Würzburg had 6 shots blocked, but that also shows that especially in persona of Baumann, they don't really put much accuracy on the shots. Or on the other side, Karlsruhe was standing quite well in their defense, but yeah, it's going to be very tough for Würzburg. I mean, they have that very important game we talked about when we spoke about St. Pauli, but they have that very important game against St. Pauli coming up. For both sides, they really should win. And we said that off air. We still see Würzburg a bit up, a bit as the favorite team, because you kind of have the feeling that they still are more eager to at least trying winning. Yeah, for Karlsruhe, I think this is the other kind of, I don't know, story. Karlsson got a yellow card in after 8 seconds. I think that's the earliest yellow card that was ever received, at least in Zweite Bundesliga. And he was sent off in the second half very late. So kind of good for him. I don't know, but that's something Karlsruhe has to look out for this season as well. They are similar to Düsseldorf. They are involved in a lot of games where red cards are being given, or yellow reds. So yeah, that's something maybe just saying that the coach has to look out for a bit, that he substitutes earlier. Because of course it's not that easy. If one of your men has a yellow card after 8 seconds, you can't really sub him out immediately after that. But there were some players that were similar to that position, and then you just weaken your team. I mean, you expect them to still, especially if they're midfielders, to intercept, to maybe pull a foul in situations, and then is always the danger of them getting the second yellow. So this is something maybe Christian Eichner has to look out for, because that can really be costing him players in the end. And with that, I mean, we always talk about how short this half of the season is now, how many games are being played, and that if you're always forced to change your lineup due to something like that, that can really cost you wins and points that are vital for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess you can look at like Karlsruhe's situation last season, and we know how they escaped at the skin of their teeth. They're certainly better placed than they were this time last season under Alois Schwarz. So, you know, they've got, you know, as their record shows, 6 wins, 1 draw, 7 defeats. They are very much a win or loss team. They don't draw very often. For Würzburg, I guess the one thing with them is that they still show a spirit and a desire to get a result. And that's not really an indictment on St. Pauli, but St. Pauli are almost suffering a bit like Schalke in the way that once they go down, that's it. It doesn't, you know, they have done it twice where they've come from 2 goals behind to score 2 late goals, but it's no way to win games, and it's no way to get out of the bottom three. And I think that's, you know, it's the game on the 6th is so important, because if they can't get a result, you know, they're already 3 points adrift from Sanhouse, and it's just going to be really hard for them. You know, it's crazy because we've played 14 games, but yeah, it's looking very, very grim for both sides. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the final 3 games, starting in Hanover when they hosted Sanhouse. Our final group of games starts in Hanover. They hosted Sandhausen. Again, Hanover, a team that needs to really hit the ground running in 2021. They came in on the back of a draw, and this game wasn't particularly close. The scoreboard suggested it. 4-0 to the host. A brace from Marvin Dukes and a brace from Patrick Tuomasi. Tuomasi was really the difference maker in this game. Subbed on at halftime for Vladimir Sulemani. He scores 3 minutes after coming onto the pitch, and it really changed the dynamic of the game. And if it was much the same for Sandhausen, just horrible defensively, keeper stranded, and they are in trouble. We know we were talking about St. Pauli, we've talked about Würzburg, we'll get on to Braunschweig in a moment, but Sandhausen are in that group of four that is in real danger of being relegated, and geez, they offer very little going forward, but defensively they are all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the better Sandhausen players, I don't want to say best because that's not really possible in that game, but Siegmeier and Wolle were probably the two players that you had the feeling wanted to do something against that defeat, although it sounds a bit weird pointing out the goalkeeper, but he still saved us around 60% of the shots against him, so you could kind of see where this whole game was leaning towards too. Diekmeyer, you always had the feeling he was going the extra mile, but it doesn't really make sense when the rest of the nine players isn't. Yeah, and for Hannover, I mean, you have the feeling Tomasi didn't go into the season as I think officials would have expected him to. Dutch is always one who, yeah, has to go the extra mile, otherwise he wouldn't score. And then that game, you could really see that the whole energy Tomasi brought into that game was carrying on to the rest of the players in the pitch. And especially that last goal, I would just go ahead and say if it would have been the first goal for Tomasi, he would have missed it. I mean, you could see Dux on the other side demanding the ball and Tomasi just goes on. That can go wrong. But at that stage of the game, I thought you can do it. In general, especially in the second half, good performance by Hannover. I mean, Dominik Kaiser actually managed to to have a corner that was converted into a goal. So Hannover fans will be quite happy because I think it's probably the first real corner that actually lead into something good or led into something good. And I mean, Dux was involved in 3 out of 4 goals as well. But once going back to the 4-0, I mean, it's okay, the game is done anyway, but if you just look at that, Tomasi can think for at least 20 seconds what he wants to do, and he's already in the box. Nobody presses him, there are 3 players around him, nobody does anything. So that's something you have the feeling that isn't getting better at Sandhausen, that they let their opponent score too easily. No matter what the score sheet is, this is something you shouldn't be doing. Because at that stage, it's even not like, we either get another goal or we open everything up, create chances of our own. They did not. They had 2 shots on target and Essa didn't have problems. I mean, Espine had the start into the game, missed it, and after that, Sandhausen completely shut down everything going forward. And yeah, for Hannover, they shouldn't rely too much on that win. I mean, of course, a 4-0 win is good, but they still have a very weird season until now, in my opinion. but you can see that if you have really a number of games where you don't lose and you win. I mean, look at Fortuna Düsseldorf, we'll talk about them in a minute, but that can really put you up places in the table. So yeah, they should, I mean, although they won with 4-0, they have to win a couple of games more to actually, I mean, the whole situation in Hannover, I mean, they think they don't need strikers, fans really want strikers, they demand transfers. And Martin Kind kind of blocking everything, and everything is going south at the moment. What that in that matter again, but okay, when it isn't with Martin Kind, but yeah, really, still really weird season for Hannover and for Sandhausen. Their only strength this season is that they're not that they have Würzburg and St. Pauli for me at least, and I mean even still think Braunschweig is a bit better than them just from the way they play. So yeah. Probably tough season. I said that every week for Sandhausen, but in those games you can really see where their weaknesses lie.
Yep, and that's pretty much almost everywhere. It's a good win for Hannover, but again, like, we may get a better indication of where they play Darmstadt this coming weekend, and you know that shapes up to be a very interesting encounter. Both sides really not where they want to be in the table, and yeah, it could be one of those coach killer games, who knows. Sandhausen are in real trouble, they need some wins and quickly. Eva did touch on Fortuna Düsseldorf because they just continue to win. Since that 5-0 defeat to VfL Bochum, they have gone and won 5 in a row, with the fifth being the Monday night win against Paderborn. 2-1, and they were well worth the victory in this game. Christopher Pettersson and Keenan Karaman getting on the score sheet. A bit of a blunder from Florian Kastenmeier ensured that Chris Fulrich got his 6th goal of the campaign. He's been mightily impressive for Paderborn this season. But it really has been the resolve of Fortuna, who we were starting to question Uwe Rösler, and rightfully so. They'd been very, very ordinary. And when you lose 5-0 in any game against any team, you know, Bochum, pretty good side, that helps. But what has really been the catalyst of their turnaround has been their home form. Unbelievably, this season they have got the best home record. 19 points out of a possible 21. It is exceptional the way they've been able to get it done. But more importantly, they've been a lot better defensively, Eva, and they are finally converting chances.
Yeah, although just one quick note on that, I thought there was some unnecessary tension in those last 10 minutes where Düsseldorf fans would have probably were clinging their fingernails or biting their fingernails because, yeah, I think Fulrich had another chance to make it 2-2 and was basically because Düsseldorf didn't really convert their chances. They had, I think that 9 shots on target and Paderborn only had 4, and in the end you kind of had the feeling that Paderborn was still closer to score again. But Pettersson and Karaman had 3 or 2. Pettersson had 3, Karaman had 2 shots on target. And in general, we know from Paderborn in the last couple of years that they can actually that they can always create some danger, and I mean that this has been missing at some stages of this season, but still, for me, you could say that Uwe Rösler wasn't really happy. He was kind of water bottles in this match day were kind of highlight. I mean, he was throwing away the bottle, or at least throwing some water away, because, yeah, they let Paderborn create some unnecessary danger in those last 10 minutes. And I would have thought if Paderborn would have, a lot of would haves, scored earlier, actually Paderborn could have taken points out of this game. But as mentioned before, a lot of could have, would have. But yeah, for Düsseldorf, that's what I said before. They now won 5 games in a row. And now I'm not that way back from, or far away from, my whole prediction of the season table. I'm just kidding, but it's just for me that I'm not completely off the books here. And I thought that in general you can see that Düsseldorf is slowly coming back into transition and really, yeah, coming back to play football like they should in the position they're in. Might probably be a reason because a lot of their injured players are returning. They don't have to change the lineup every week. That might be a vital factor for them as well. Although they shouldn't rely on that too much. But in general, I thought they were the deserved winner. Although, once again, a bit unnecessary in the end to, yeah, make it that close.
Yeah, I think that's the only kind of criticism you could make is that once the mistake happened, Paderborn did see a way, an opening, and they nearly did get the equaliser, Furyk again, but his free kick was saved by Kastenmeier, and that's the thing. The 2-goal lead is such a tricky lead to hold because it's the question of whether you go for the third or you sit back and, you know, try and absorb the pressure, because once it gets to 2-1, momentum's completely swung, and, you know, for that last 10, it definitely felt as if Paderborn could snatch something. But ultimately, Düsseldorf were able to be resolute defensively and get the job done. What it means for Paderborn, though, is that's 3 losses in their last 5. And they currently sit in 13th. We did speak about this at the start of the season, and we'll probably speak about it again the fact that they are either going to be a team that is pushing for promotion or they will be languishing in the bottom six, and it seems that may be their fate so far. They've got a good squad, good coaching. It's just not happening for them at the moment. A team that we know that is almost tried and true in this time of the year is that it's going to become a winter wonderland in our. They hosted Eintracht Braunschweig to start 2021. And while the snow was very much present, one thing that it was snowing was goals for the hosts. Three, in fact, it was 3-1 the final score. And despite going down 1-0 to a Fabio Kaufmann goal, Florian Kruger showed that he was going to be the man to plough the snow away. Two goals for him and Pistol Pascal Testrot. They combined for 16 goals this season for Erzgebirge Aue, and an important win for them, all considered after their defeat to end last year. Eva, we know how tough it is to get results at the Erzgebirge Stadion. More so difficult when it's snowy, as you know, it seems to be the conditions you get when you play Aue around December, January, February time. And you know, despite going a goal down, geez, they were very good Aue in the response, and then really controlling the game.
Yeah, although I think Braunschweig, it was really their fault because they invited Aue in, kinda as guests. They invited the home team in, but I thought that Braunschweig was the better team in most parts of the first half. But at some stage around, I think around the 30th. Minute, they kind of lost it a bit, and that's the last thing you should do with Aue. I mean, Aue had 9 shots on goal, Braunschweig 14, but then Aue managed to convert them into 6 shots on target, and Braunschweig only 3. And I mean, Testrot had 3 out of them, Kaufmann for Braunschweig 2, and Braunschweig had a couple of shots blocked as well. And I still think that, Aue really, with Pascal Testrot this season, it's probably his best season so far. I mean, I mentioned it at the beginning. He has 9 goals already, 14 scorer points. Kruger has 12 scorer points. And they do really make a good duo up there. And for me, I still think really glad for Testrot that he finally found his place here. And yeah, I think you can really see that he's a huge factor for the Aue team, not only in scoring goals, but as giving assists, but also just from the mentality it brings on the pitch. And that's probably on the other side something that misses from the Braunschweig perspective. I mean, you have that very good save by Proschwitz before the 1-0. He really tries to bring the ball back and onto the field, or let it stay in Braunschweig's possession. But you kind of have the feeling there is not really one player that goes forward. I mean, they got Brian Behrend from Bielefeld. I think it's a really good appointment because he has experience. He can be a good person or good player for free kicks or in general set pieces. I mean, they have Felix Groß for that as well. But he can bring some calming into the or calm just calmness into the defense. But yeah, I think it's an expected difficult season for Braunschweig, as mentioned before. For Aue, yeah, I think they sit comfortably in midfield. Don't expect them to kind of knock on the first places anytime soon, because the teams before them are just a bit too strong, in my opinion. And for them, there's too much incontinuity in the way they play. But yeah, for them, a very good result and deserved as well in the end.
Absolutely. We did touch on Pistol Paco, who has 9 goals, 5 assists in 14. He is on track, if he continues his vein of form, to scoring 21 goals, which would be a career best. His most in the Zweite Bundesliga was 15. That was in his first season for Aue back in the 2018-19 season. So we will see. He's definitely become a factor this season once again. Just a matter of whether he can keep that up. And Flo Kruger, who I like quite a lot, what he brings to the table. I think he will be an interesting one going forward at the end of this season, depending on what the financial situations are for a lot of clubs in Germany. I feel like a team that might be a team gunning for promotion, or a team that's just come down might be really keen on bringing him in. He's young, got a lot of talent, and he continues to thrive under Dirk Schuster. That is it. Our first podcast of 2021. We've made it. Again, earlier than expected, but we are always happy to talk about the Zweite Bundesliga. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you have a safe week, weekend. When the action returns, match day 15, we'll be back next week to review all of it. And until next time, stay safe.